Welcome to Chats for You. I'm James Walker, and this is the podcast where I try and talk to people I like, and they sometimes let me. Great premise, right? Great premise for a podcast. I'm a fan of it, certainly. In this episode, episode 55, I talked to the comedian James Acaster for a third time. But before we get onto that, just a very quick life update of something that I've did quite recently. If you're not interested in hearing any of this and are just here for the pure Acaster chat, feel free to scroll through and you'll just get to a point where you hear two voices talking, and that will be the start of the chat. But I promise you, I won't take up much of your time here. Please just trust me that I'm quite a nice boy and you might grow to like me. So I recently did a pub quiz, and guys, I absolutely smashed it. And by that I mean came second out of four, so not as impressive when you see how few teams there are, but still, won a bottle of wine that none of us are going to go back to claim, because you've only got a week to do it, and we can't go back within a week. So, won a possible bottle of wine that we're not having. But yeah, I've just got something that might help any of you if you're planning to do a pub quiz in the near future. So before it started, this quiz, I posted something online asking for assistance. I said, doing a pop quiz tonight. Anyone got any good, reliable answers I can go with if we've not got a fucking clue? So these are just answers you can pop down. If among your team you don't have any idea what the answer could be, not even the faintest Scooby. That's not a phrase, is it? The faintest Scooby. Is it something like the faintest something and then Scooby? Yeah, so if you've not got the... I've made it up now, so I'm going to use it. If you've not got the faintest Scooby... what to put. These are some of the answers you could use, and you might end up getting a point for them. So here we go. Michael Portillo, Trevor Francis, Reginald Dwight, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, 1972, Cassius Clay, Central Republic of Africa, Enya. There we go. And that's... so if you've not got any... idea what to put if you've not got the faintest Scooby. That is something, isn't it? The more I've said it, the more I've realised the faintest Scooby seems like it... I think it's something people have said before. But yeah, if you're struggling with a pop quiz, pop one of them down. Michael Portillo might win you that quiz. Especially if he's really clever. He probably is quite clever. And if he's on your team. Yeah, so either put Michael Portillo as an answer to something... or have him on your team, you might know some of the ones about politics. Try and get Michael Portillo on your quiz team, is what I'm saying. Now it's time for the chat. This is, as I've said, with James Acaster, the third time he's been on this podcast. It's a first for this podcast, and also probably the first for all podcasts, as in I don't think a person has ever appeared on a podcast three times until now. But just please do not fact check that. Just take my word for it. That would be nice. Yeah, this was recorded a couple of weeks ago at the start of November through in Glasgow. And when I was wandering around with James beforehand, even though his show was there, when people were saying, "Hey, James," at us, I absolutely responded like it was for me. Even though they were obviously 100% talking to him, because they're there to see his show. But I guess this podcasting lark has just gone to my head a bit, guys. And I thought I'm getting recognised all over the joint. Which was not the case, obviously. James, you're the... It's alright. It's very nice of you to consider that.
I was really chewing into the mic.
So as we were chatting about a second ago, you're the very first guest to appear three times on this podcast.
A pleasure.
So how does that feel? Like, as honours go, it must be pretty up there.
Yeah, this is the big one. I mean, you know, finally.
I was worried that other people were going to get there before me, but I always knew that I was the favourite to win. Do the treble.
And since appearing on this the last time, you've been on Conan, released a book, and got 4 Netflix specials on the way. How much of that do you think was down to your appearances on this podcast?
100% of it. I mean, it's no coincidence, is it? Mm-hmm. You know, before I was on your podcast, I didn't have any of those things. Then afterwards, I get them. It's very simple mathematics. I don't know why anyone would even think it was down to anything else.
Yeah.
I didn't do any work between.
Yeah, you know, just... This podcast, when I put it out,
came out of the podcast, and then I went into hibernation, and I came out just to record this, and everyone was like, hey, you've got a book, you've been on Conan. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, it's good. Cool. I'm glad I could be of such assistance. I have, I think I told you when I was texting you, I have titled this one, James Acaster 3, James Acaster with a Vengeance, going to Die Hard.
Absolutely. That's what people think of when they think of me.
Yeah, completely. But when people maybe see the title of the episode, they might not get it immediately and might think you're got a vengeance against something or someone. So is there anyone who you might like to wreak your vengeance on?
Well, I mean, there was a teacher at school who hated me for no reason. I'd love to get my vengeance on her, but it'd be one of those things with her. It's genuinely something I stop and think about every now and again. So every now and again I think about it and think about what I'd say if I met her. Because, I was 11, 12, or whatever. It was my first year of secondary school. And she just hated me. And because I wasn't, old enough or mature enough to be able to articulate my emotions, she just completely just walked all over me and won the battle. Whereas, now I'd love to go back as an adult and just articulately say everything to her that I wanted to at the time. So, it's not so much revenge, it's just, here's what that kid should have said to you, you bully. So, but I think about it, at least once a week, I imagine bumping into her.
So what would the perfect setting be? Where would you be? What would the backdrop be?
The perfect one would just be, because most likely she thinks that she's completely got away with it. And that if she saw me now, I'd be pleased to see her. And she'd be like, ah, James, you're doing so well done, or whatever. And then you'd just love to go, you were the... worst. You were a disgrace to teaching. So preferably, at some sort of, a gig or some event where I'm at work, and then she just comes to surprise me, thinking that I'll be excited to see her again, and then in front of people I can tell her what an awful teacher she was and how she should be ashamed of herself. Yeah, that's what I think about a lot.
Yeah.
Or even her school. If I could if I got invited, that'd be what I'd like, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Come and speak to the kids, it'd be great, Oh, yeah, okay, fine. I'd come along to do a talk, and then just to the kids go, your teacher, do not follow her lead. Yeah. She's one of the worst, and I'm sorry to those of you who maybe have, gotten the, that she's bullied already. You are better than her. You do not need to take any of this shit. That's what I'd like. Yeah, just in front of her own kids.
And that'd be the entire content of your...
The whole thing would be about how, look... you kids have actually, you're enough as it is, and don't take any leads from this woman. She's an awful person. Just don't let her steer you in any direction whatsoever. Yeah, so I'd like to do that.
Yeah, that is a good vengeance. Yeah. That's a good vengeance against someone. So I'm going to tell you a bit about an experience that I had recently, okay? So I was walking home, and a man got out of his car, handed me his phone, and says, please, you talk to them.
Great. Great, yeah.
In that moment, I had no idea what was about to happen.
Yeah.
It turned out to be a delivery driver that was lost and English wasn't his first language.
Okay.
So I had to try and assist people on the phone to find out where he needed to go.
Yes.
But in that moment, I thought, I might be a secret agent here.
Sure.
Because that's how the phone call would happen,
I think. Yeah.
When was a memorable time you entered a situation without a clue what was about to happen? Everything's very confusing.
Mm.
And because that question's quite tricky, I've got an optional one that's much easier. Do you think you'd make a good secret agent?
So, as you know from seeing my shows, I have in a past life been an undercover cop.
Yes.
And I was excellent at, to be fair, I wasn't that great at that. didn't go very well. I eventually got fired for shouting my postcode out at a rival gang. So where I fell down a lot with being an undercover cop was that I cared too much about making friends. And you can't do that if you're a cop. It's got to be, you got to be a lone wolf. It can't be all about wanting people to like you.
Yeah.
Especially if you're undercover. You're going to be the bad guy to someone sooner or later. So, you know, I let my feelings get in the way. And so I think I've got too many, I care too much about other people and what they think to be a good undercover cop. In terms of going into situations and not knowing what was going to happen, I've been to some restaurants before where, like, you know, you just let them do the menu for you. I like doing that, where you go, just, yeah, bring whatever you like.
Oh, okay.
And, like in Edinburgh, actually, at Mark Greenaway's restaurant.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Try and go there during the fringe as a treat. Uh-huh. You know, cause you've got to give yourself a treat at some point during the month. Just do the taster menu, and you don't know what's going to, you know, what the next dish
that's
is.
Good, yeah.
And it's very exciting.
What point during the fringe is that usually your treat day? Like, when do you do it?
I think, like, start of the third week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just get in there. Start of, when you're starting to flag or whatever,
yeah,
got that to look forward to. You do that, and yeah, it kind of gives you a little bit of a, puts a swing in your step.
So that's when people should come see you. Everyone should come on that third week of the fringe.
Oh,
you'd be all pumped up.
Probably would have. I'd say come and see me in the first week.
When you don't need the dessert.
See, the first week when everyone's happy to be there. But but mainly not because of, like, I still don't think it's down to the comics. It's down to the audience that turns up in the first week are the keenest people. So they're just the nicest audiences.
Yeah.
The second week, it depends, like, how your show's been received so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but that's when it shifts. Ideally, you almost want to show that it's getting great word of mouth but has received no reviews or anything. So if you're filling it just on word of mouth by the second week, you're having a lovely time. And then the third week, usually, if you are that person, you've now got some reviews and you've now got the worst people ever showing up to see you. But then it just depends. Some people have got no one coming to see them, and that's really hard. So, you know, who knows?
I imagine on the third week of The Fringe, Mark Greenaway is just packed with comedians.
Who was all there toasting each other, going, yeah. Don't know what the next dish is going to be, but who cares?
As I was mentioning, you've got some Netflix specials on the way.
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience filming them? Because you've worked on them for a long time, and then you now set them in stone. How was that?
I really enjoyed revisiting them all, taking them on tour and, like, working on them and not, like, just going, because I could have just relearned them and then just did them as they were, and that would have been unwise, I think, because, like, you know, the oldest one is 2014, filming it 3 years later, you've improved as a comic, you know, your writing's better, your performance is better. If you just do the same show you did 3 years ago, then it's just going to not measure up. It's not going to seem like your best work. So, like, it was good to take those and work on them again and not see them as finished. They're never finished, and, like, you know, just try and keep on going. And even during Edinburgh in August, I filmed them in September, but I was changing them in Edinburgh and stuff like that. So it was, like, you know, right down to it. So that was fun, like, going back and tying them together a bit as well and seeing callbacks across the shows and things that you could... That was really enjoyable. Filming it was, you know, amazing and stressful at the same time. I was filming four shows a day for 2 days in a row, and you know, the audience, it was the venue that I wanted, to the Tabernacle in Notting Hill, but the audience is like 200 people. So it's not like if you do a big venue and you're always going to get, you know, your smallest laugh is still a big laugh, but instead it's like, you know, there's still a lot of room with 200 people to be like, not get everyone all the time or even just get a very small laugh every now and again. And so, like, I was quite, because I knew, especially the second day, I was like, this is my last chance to get them now. And so I put a lot of pressure on myself. But right now we're editing them, and I'm so happy with them. They're exactly how I wanted them to be.
Oh, that's great.
You know, which is a rare thing as a comic, I find, is to say, yep, that's exactly what I wanted. So, they look how I wanted them to. The performance is how I wanted it to be. And it's very exciting putting them together. I personally... You know, I won't actually believe the Netflix thing until they're on there.
Right, yeah.
Because, like, it's been something that has been, like, just all over the shop from day one of, like, yep, definitely happening, to, oh, maybe not, and it definitely happened again, and all this, and it's like, as far as I know, yeah, it is. But I just don't trust anything until it's completely done, so, yeah. But...
So, and when you saw Netflix, you'll know, like, when you finish watching something, it often gives you recommendations of, like, what else you could watch.
Yeah.
And when your specials are up there, and when they finish, what would you like people to be recommended? Like, what would you like to come up when you finish your specials? Or, much simpler way of asking this question, what have you been watching on Netflix?
So, I've been watching... So, I can't remember what's doing, what everyone's doing, really. So, I'm watching Stranger Things right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched Mindhunter recently. I've got Orphan Black lined up to watch next, which I'm really excited about watching. I've only just discovered that. And I've been watching The Good Place, which is brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And then I'll watch the stand-up specials. And I really liked Chelsea Peretti's one, and I really liked Maria Bamford's one.
Yeah.
Just because they were different, you know, it's a different way of filming specials, and that was really interesting. But in a way that didn't grate. Sometimes people do like different ways of filming specials. I won't name comics who have done it because that's not fair, but like, you know, they kind of try a different way and go, oh, I just kind of want to be watching the show.
And with
Maria Bamford, it's weird because you're kind of a bit like, so every now and again you're like, I don't know, I feel like I just like to watch you do this show because it's such a great show. And I know friends have seen it live, so it's the best stand up show they've ever seen. But at the same time, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm really glad she did it like this. It's a really, you know, for people that haven't seen it, you know, she's filming it, you know, a version of it just in the mirror, just herself in her bedroom, and then one-to-one person in the living room, and then like a few people on the street, and then a backyard in front of like a small crowd, and it gets bigger and bigger gradually until she's in a theatre. And so each routine is in front of a different size audience, and it changes. So, you know, it affects, you know, how it would feel if you went to see it live. But then I guess sometimes that's the point they're making, is to go and see it live then. You know, even though I can go, well, I can't. I'm not living in America. But still, like, it's quite nice that comics have started looking at it differently. Like, when you're filming it, what's the experience you can give people that they can't get just by seeing you live, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll be watching it at home, so how are we going to make this feel different for them?
So as we mentioned, you've got the four shows going up on Netflix. Fingers crossed.
I still don't believe it. So yeah, we'll see. If you're listening to this in a few years' time, you're like, he never got on Netflix. Then just know, I fully expected that as well. So it's fine.
So three of them are part of an original trilogy, and then there's another one that was filling in the gaps.
Yes.
So I was thinking, if we end up doing a fourth chat, can we do the same? So what we'll do is we'll fill in the gaps between all the times we've chatted.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good idea. Well, the fourth one filled in one gap.
Right, okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
We would have to kind of look at the three that we've recorded and then decide where they fit on a timeline, and then fill a gap in. So we'd have to just choose a gap in between two of them and plug that.
And I'm sure you've got time in your schedule for that if we just meet up and listen to all three of them together.
Easily, of course I have, We've established this is the podcast that made me, so of course I've got time for it.
James Acaster's Classic Scrapes, you have written a book. How on earth did that feel when you first seen it?
Yeah, weird. Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was something that I didn't when I went for the meeting originally with the publishers. I didn't know because it was just my agent had just said, you know, these publishers would like to speak to you about writing a book, but didn't say what the book was. So if you've got any ideas, and I was going to cancel the meeting because I didn't have any ideas for books at all. And I thought, as I was on my way, it was in Edinburgh actually during the festival, I was on my way to meet them. I thought, I'm wasting these people's time. I've got absolutely nothing. And then they were the ones who had the idea. They were like, we've heard, you know, your scrapes that you tell on Josh's show, and we'd just like to put them in a book. And I was like, oh, of course, that's easy. But why didn't I think of that? Yeah, that's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
Why, you know, especially because, like, you know, due to, like, how much money there was at that radio show, I was basically doing that segment for free anyway. Gladly. It was great. But like, there are things that I've never made any money from. So why I didn't think to kind of like, oh, I'll put them in a book and make some money out of them.
Because
I've told them on the radio and it's got a little bit of a following. But like, it never occurred to me. So like, seeing it when I got the book was very weird, because it's like, it hadn't even been something that had been... So a lot of the time things are in your head first, and then you set about making them happen. Whereas this wasn't in my head at all. You know, it started happening when these people suggested it, so I started doing it, and then you get it and go, why did you even anticipate this? So normally it's weird when you see the physical thing, you know, because you're like, oh, this is what I imagined. But this is weird because it's like, I never even imagined this. Why is this here?
And was it hard to pick which ones went in the book, or were they just like the funniest ones to you?
Yeah, well, it was... I had to not... you know, be too affected by or influenced by the radio show. And so I just like wrote all of them up, first of all, just all the ones I had, plus some ones that didn't ever make it on the radio show, and then kind of edit as I went along. Kind of, you read it and see how the book flows in general, and go, okay, I'm going to have to kill some babies and go get rid of this one, and you know, and this slows it down, and like, so just doing it like that, and you always have to think, you know, it's not necessarily the end for that particular story. If I take it out, you can probably use it as something in the future, but it just didn't, you know, a lot of them, there was a certain flow to it because it became like an accidental autobiography,
right,
so there was a certain flow to it where, like, you know, some stories just didn't fit in with the general arc of things.
And so I came to the book launch event in Edinburgh during August, and we launched that book so hard. We launched the shit out of that. There was a mouse running around.
There was a mouse running around in the bookshop.
A lot of kids screaming. And a man that was continuing to shop near us. Which is quite funny. Have the other shows on this tour been as eventful? And was there any standout moments on the book tour?
There hasn't been any mice or anything like that. They've all been in venues and not in bookshops. So that's helped. Yesterday was quite a standout moment because there's a story that I tell in the book that I don't always do it every night, but I did it at the book launch when you were there, about when I was in school and I in music class wrote a song called La 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 Humpty, which is to the Humpty Dumpty to the tune of La La Bumba, and we performed it for the class and we had to perform it over and over again because the class liked it so much until I hated it and retired it on stage. Yesterday I do a Q&A at the end of everyone, and yesterday someone asked if I could end the show by performing La 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 Humpty, and that's been asked a few times on the tour, but I always say I can only do it if I have my backing singers, so four people have to get up and join me, and I'm not going to force anyone, so if four people volunteer I'll do it, and always no one volunteers, so I never have to do it. And yesterday just like about five hands went up, so I had to do it. So yesterday we ended the show by singing La 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 Humpty, and that was very memorable, and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Like,
I thought, ah, oh, this is going to be embarrassing, and it does genuinely carry bad memories for me. But it was actually a lot of fun to do it with them. And have,
so do you think you might do it again at some point on this?
I'm not going to force it.
Yeah,
I think if people ask for it, then I'll say, yep, if we're going to have four backing singers, and then everyone's in, and it's fine. But I think with that kind of thing, the instant I start to try and make people do it, it's going to be, if I'm like, right, and we'll end the show by singing La 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 Humpty, first of all, I need four backing singers, I'm not going to be able to get people to get up. It had to be their idea, and they want to get up, and then we can do it.
Because I remember during the book launch event, you were telling that story, but then you said, I'm not going to sing it. Clearly, you've waned on that over time.
Well, I think with the Q&A, you know, whatever the question is, you have to answer it. Not block it, because then it's like, you know, bad improv, isn't it? It's just not fair. So if someone asks, can you sing the song? I think it's fine to go, yeah, if I have my backing singers. And then, like, if I don't, then it's like, fair enough, the audience don't want to hear, because then it's up to them again as an audience, so it's fine. But then, like, you know, you have to kind of go, yeah, I will, if I get backing singers. And then if the backing singers get up, I've got to sing it. You got to do it, and just, like, put your ego to one side and just sing the stupid song.
And I guess since after the shows you've been doing book signings and that, I bet you've nailed your signature.
Not at all.
No?
No, it's the most inconsistent signature ever. it's not very consistent at all. Yeah.
In what way is it, like, so inconsistent? Like,
it's just sometimes it's clearer than others. Sometimes I, like, add, like, you know, things into letters that aren't in letters. Like, little you know, kicks and curves and, you know, zigzags that aren't in those letters.
Well, I think in my bag I've got my book that you signed.
Yeah.
Do you want me to look at that and see?
I have a look at it. I can tell you if it's at all like my signature is at
this
stage. If
I've got like a premium grade signature, let's say
that's Sarah Pascoe's book.
But I have got your book somewhere.
Yours, I think you took behind and put behind you, as far as I can remember.
There we go. Yeah, you've not signed Sarah Pascoe's book. That'd be weird.
No, I could. I'd happily sign Sarah Pascoe's book. Obviously.
So let's see if this is a. I want to make sure I've got a premium signature.
Yeah, that is a much better signature than I'm doing at the minute. But I'm doing like a less organised version of that, and that itself is not organised. That you can see where each letter is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Now, pretty much everything between the A and T in Acaster is just a straight line.
Oh my god.
So it's like there's nothing there.
Yeah. By the end of the tour, we'll just be a met. Like just.
Yeah, it'll just be one letter. Yeah, that'll be it.
Glad I've got one of the good ones there.
Yeah, you absolutely have.
So this is a section I like to call it Super Clever Question Reversal, okay?
Great.
So what I've done is take some of the questions that people are usually asked in these sort of interviews, flip them around.
Great.
And imagine me giving myself a good old pat on the back when I thought of this, because
I'm
very proud.
Thank you.
So the first one, pretty easy. What's the nicest heckle you've ever had?
What? As in...
or maybe a supportive one or something.
Yeah, you get stuff like I remember at the end of a festival in my first solo year when I was having a very bad show, and a lady shouted out, "We're all really enjoying it," and that was nice because there was a guy at the beginning who was just horrible.
Right.
So and then he'd kind of soured the mood. And when it's your debut show and the audience don't actually know who you are, they're all taking a punt on you for an hour.
Yeah.
All you need is one person at the beginning being horrible, and then it's just the longest hour of your life.
Is that someone in the audience?
Guy. He was actually a reviewer who got involved in the show, but he got himself involved in it. He had an ego on him, which is the worst thing for a reviewer.
Yeah.
But he'd kind of gone on and said some pretty out of order things just straight out the gate in minute one.
God.
In the first minute of the show, and then it never recovered. But at one point, a lady shouted out, "We're all really enjoying this," and everyone clapped. And I was like, "Okay, cool." But
was his review like one star? I wasn't involved in this enough.
It was an article eventually that he wrote about me and two other things, and it was basically these shows that he had gone to where the comedian had turned on an audience member, and every time the audience member in question was him. And it's just like comedians is bullying audience members now. You know, no, you went to three shows that you had heard had audience participation in them, because I used to back then I had an audience one bit of audience participation in the show, and he had heard about that. So he was kind of going around, because back then, that year it was 2011, there's a lot of like Adam Riches won the award that year. It was like big getting people on stage year. And so that was mainly what all the reviewers were writing about, was that, you know, this is the year of audience participation.
Yeah.
And so he was going out to write a article about how, you know, basically comedians just bullying audience members by getting them involved in the shows. And, you know, he clearly had been to a few where he hadn't been got on stage.
He hadn't reached his word limit.
So he was like, okay, I have to go to some and get myself involved in that. And so he would go there being nasty. And he said that I went on the offensive, even though I tried to give him a hug to kind of like, you know, diffuse everything. Yeah. Come on, mate, we're friends. And he was just shouting, "No, get away from me, I don't like this show." It's like, I don't know who of us is on the offensive here, but yeah. I'm being as nice as I possibly can.
A hug's one of the nicest moves.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah. And eventually I kind of, I think I insulted him, but that was like 45 minutes into the show when I was like, this guy has absolutely ruined this.
Right.
And so like, I think that's when he was able to go, right, Acaster went on the offensive, and put that in there. You go, mate, I'm 25, I'm doing my debut Edinburgh show. Do you want to like ease off just a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, you're a man in his 50s with a family who's like a journalist. I'm hardly making a living out of this yet. You really don't need to turn up, deliberately ruin it, and then write an article about it.
Yeah.
Where you don't tell the truth. That's another guy I get revenge on, actually.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Like, they're in the same place. He's at the school as well for some reason.
Yeah. I absolutely love it. Yeah. Destroy both of them.
So another question I've flipped around in a super clever way.
Mm.
Is there anything we can joke about? And I'm going to compile a list, and then I'll send it around to everyone when it's done.
I think we can joke about flip-flops.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. You're not going to upset anyone. It's absolutely
flip-flops
fine.
Yeah. Have you ever done that yourself?
No, I don't want to offend anyone. No, I've never done it. From my own personal experience, you can joke about apricots.
So flip-flops and apricots.
Yeah.
We
kind of rhyme.
Yeah.
Weirdly, that's an accidental half-rhyme there. So, yeah.
So maybe you might do a routine about
flip-flops. Do a rap about them. Yeah.
You're going to get into rap, aren't you?
Yeah, probably at some point. Yeah. Everyone does at some stage.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
Well, after you're appearing on the fourth time, you might get called up by Jay-Z or something. I've said
Jay-Z. Jay-Z could phone someone. He's a rapper, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a phone, isn't he? Yeah,
he has got a phone.
How many phones do you think Jay-Z's got?
Oh.
He's probably got quite a few,
99?
Yes. No, I don't want to say it. So, James, how do you think you'll finish in comedy instead of how you got started? How do you think you'll finish? Let's say, if you had to guess, like, your perfect scenario, going out in a blaze of glory, what would it be?
Perfect way to finish comedy is obviously just on a high. So, like, you want your last bit of work to be a good one. So whether it's a stand-up show or, you know, a radio show, a TV show, a book, whatever it is, your last thing to do to be this celebrated piece of work that you can, you know, great, you know, I'd love to do a David Bowie, and just be like, your last thing is all about dying, but no one knows you're about to die.
Oh yeah.
Release it, die, like the week after it comes out, and everyone's like, "Whoa, he left us with this!" Like, I'd like to do that.
That'd be really cool.
That'd be good. Whereas most likely, it's just going with me having a massive sulk and quitting. So, like, that's probably what will happen at some point. I'll go, "This is too stressful. Uh-huh. It's way too much. Why am I dealing? Why am I putting myself through this?" And then I'll just stop. But then I'll probably, I don't know, I'll probably stop and then like have a pause and then reassess and then go, actually, what I can do is this much lower pressure version of this. So, you know, I reckon that one day I'll probably, just kind of just restrict myself to only live stuff and filming the shows. Okay. Like, I think that's how I feel, is that I'd like to do like, just write the shows, perform them, which is like, you know, just a necessity for getting them good.
Mm-hmm.
And then film them, and then you've got the permanent record of them. And then I'll probably have to just get a part-time job as well, maybe. You know, I don't know.
What sort of part-time job?
Probably go back to working with autistic kids, do that. Right. You know, that was fun. I liked that. Fun isn't the wrong word, but, like, you know, it was...
Rewarding?
No. It was... It's quite... It's a weirdly addictive job. It's just a lot to get obsessed with. Right. Amongst it, a lot to get fascinated by. You know, you're constantly learning, and that's quite a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and also it feels like it matters. You know, you're invested in it. So, like, yeah, it's just something about it's just quite. I don't know what the word is really. Addictive is probably like the wrong word, but like, yeah, it's you get hooked quite easy. So it's quite easy to. I think a good job is one that you care about, right?
Yeah,
so it's quite good.
Completely.
Yeah.
Cool. So now I've got some listener questions. Some listeners have sent in.
Great.
Or commented on a post, is the correct wording?
Yeah.
So friend Will says, we've heard your classic scrapes. Give us a modern scrape. He's been quite demanding there. I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, he's right in there. a modern one. So you mentioned me doing Conan earlier.
Oh, yeah.
I went on that. And it was a real struggle. If you watch the footage, you know, there's one joke goes down really well, but the rest of them really, you know, minimal laughter. It was really hard.
Yeah.
The team on Conan were amazing. Like, one of the friendliest shows I've ever appeared on. But, and, you know, let me make it clear, I'd love to do it again. But, but like, it was quite a hard gig. And then I came off, and then within half an hour of coming off stage, I'd shat myself in a steakhouse.
Right.
Because I had food poisoning. So I go into the steakhouse, shit my pants. Then I went back to my apartment, woke up the next morning, couldn't hear out of one ear, had to go to ER, got my ears syringed, but all the water that was going into my ears poured out down my back and soaked my ass. So I walked out looking like I'd physically shit myself again, and my eyes still had the shame from the previous night shitting myself in eyes, so everyone could kind of, it just looked like I had done it again. And then I lay in bed for a week with food poisoning, and then when I eventually decided I got to leave the house, because I've got to, you know, be in America for like 5 minutes and enjoy myself, I stepped outside and someone shouted, hey Ron Weasley at me, and then I just went back in my hotel, back into my room and just lay down for a bit longer. So like, you know, that's the most recent kind of like an abridged version of it. That's the most recent kind
of. And that doesn't happen to everyone that goes on Conan, right? That's not
I think most people go on Conan and come off and then they go for the celebrate and have a nice time. I don't think within half an hour they've already shit their pants and have come crashing back down to earth again, you know. You usually get to enjoy it for a bit, you know. There's no enjoyment for me.
So when you were in LA, which is Macaulay of Shorten, isn't it? I don't know.
That's really nice. Cool. I'll catch on.
Yeah, I hope so. Did you have any like important meetings, like you wore a suit to and stuff like that?
Is that your question?
That's just me.
I didn't wear a suit. No, I had some meetings that. The thing is that they don't feel important once you're doing them because you know, they're meeting up with everybody, and you realise that you're not like a big important guy because you've got the meeting. But it is still quite exciting to be like, I've got a meeting with, you know, whoever it is. A network that you've heard of. Or so, you know, I've heard of, you know, I've grown up watching stuff on that network, and now I'm going in to have a meeting, and that's exciting. Uh-huh. But you know that, you know, they don't necessarily even know who you are.
Right.
They just agreed to go, yeah, okay, we'll talk to him. But you realise that over there, they're all having meetings constantly.
Okay.
And it's just it's just a conveyor belt of meetings. Uh-huh. And actually, so like, you know, it's not like they're important, but it's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I enjoy the kind of pretending.
Yeah.
Going out over there. Yeah, this is a nice little week of pretending. But like, yeah, don't expect anything from it.
So those meetings, what were the exact details? Because I'm fishing for a scoop here.
Okay, like, yeah.
Scoop.
Yeah.
I get a scoop. no, not really.
Maybe those scoops I could give.
So this is a question from Camilla. If you could be a pizza topping, how would you harness that power to undercut the rise of fascism? So we could do it in two. We could do it in two parts. So if you're a pizza topping, what would you be?
Well, I genuinely, even though everyone says it's the worst pizza topping, I'd be a Hawaiian pizza. I like Hawaiian pizza. Mm-hmm. And I think that would definitely sort out the rise of fascism, because the people of Hawaii, you know, fascists wouldn't like people in Hawaii.
Yeah.
It's not the way, you know, it's not full of fascist Hawaii, they're quite laid back.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's a nice place.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that could definitely combat the fascists. I think that's the only answer you can give to that question. You'd be
it's
Hawaiian.
Very nice,
yeah.
So this next question needs...
Where's Obama from?
Where's Obama from? I'm not sure.
Who knows? Probably not Hawaii.
It does ring a bell, that.
Yeah, it does ring a bell, but then I feel like I'm... If I'm wrong, then I'm going to look racist.
Do you want me to, like, I'll edit in a clip of me saying it
sure.
as you're talking?
Sure, yeah.
So then we know the facts.
Yeah, be fine. Yeah.
Yes, Barack Obama was born in Hawaii. Also, hello, hope you're all well at this point in the chat and you're having a nice time. Yep, this is just me popping in to confirm what I said I'd do and confirm Honolulu in Hawaii is where Barack Obama was born. See you later.
So this question needs a wee bit of context first.
Yeah.
So I was interviewing Michael Legg quite recently,
yeah.
And my mate Stuart wanted me to ask him the question, like, how big's your dick?
Yes.
Okay. So
that's interesting. Why did Stuart want to know that?
Well, he wanted to... He didn't think I'd actually ask it, because he thought I'd be too embarrassed, and like brought up to Michael, like, I'm going to ask this.
Well, of all the comedians to ask, Michael Legg is quite a... You know, it's a
better bet
than asking me.
Yeah. And then he was suggesting that I ask other people the following question because he wants to keep continuing. How big is Michael Legg's dick?
Oh, that's good. I like that. That's the question. That's really great. Did Michael Legg give a precise answer?
Yeah, he talks about it.
Had he measured it before?
He didn't give a measurement, but he just said like how happy he was with it. Like he says he's happy with it. Not like
he's happy but not thrilled.
Yeah.
So yeah, well. Yeah, I guess with Michael then. But then Michael's not happy with many things.
Right, okay.
So, you know, Michael's...
I think he's actually quite impressive,
whole
maybe.
Thing is quite, yeah, quite... he'll be quite negative about stuff. It's his act, right? So, like, I would say that in that case, I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Legg, you know, was above average.
Yeah.
But, you know, in his head, there are other more successful comics who have bigger ones, and that's all he can obsess over.
Yeah.
So I would say that's spoiling Michael's enjoyment of his own big dick is the fact that he assumes that Russell Howard has a much bigger dick than him, even though he's got nothing to base that on.
It's probably a massive.
Normally, you talk about a comedian in the podcast, and a lot of the time, hope that they don't hear it. I hope Michael hears that.
So, question from mate James. What do you eat at the cinema? He says, I guess hot dogs. Someone's got to be eating them. And also, where do you sit in the cinema when you go to the cinema?
Sure. I don't eat hot dogs in the cinema. Cool. Don't eat hot food. I think that's inconsiderate to the people around you.
It's a bit weird.
Stinks it up.
Yeah.
Normally, I don't eat anything in the cinema, really. But, like, if I was going to eat something, it would be something that... Oh, actually, no. I know exactly what I eat in the cinema. That is not true that I don't eat in the cinema. I have the ice cream.
Oh, okay, cool.
I go to Ben and Jerry's, and I get myself... In the past, it's been 3 scoops. Recently, I've been like, do you know what? Come on, man. You're 32. Get 2 scoops. They go crazy. And especially if I go to the cinema with Nish Kumar, friend of the show, I assume.
He's been on it ages ago, but then he's not been on since.
So Nish always gets Chunky Monkey ice cream when we go to the cinema, and... I kind of only get ice cream if other people are getting it. So as soon as he goes, Chunky Monkey, I'm like, okay, fine, I'm getting some. And I usually get Chunky Monkey, Cherry Garcia, and if it's a 2 scoop, if it's a 3 scoop, I'll get like one of the kind of like, you know, cakey kind of ones involved that's got like some sort of like, normally ones that you can't get in the tubs though.
Right, okay.
So, like, I'll get myself, like, a cinnamon one or, you know, something like that you know, cinnamon bun one or whatever that you can't get in tubs in the shops.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I will get the peanut butter cups one, even though you can get them in shops, but it's a great one. It's a really good one. And I used to sit in the middle on whatever row. I mean, you know, from the middle, so whatever row I'm on, I'm sat in the middle, and I'm either in the middle of the cinema as well or the back.
Yeah.
But I'm never down the front, if I can help it.
One of the weirdest things, do you go to like a view cinema a lot?
Yeah, I do.
I can't get my head around why they advertise for corporate events at the start of the films twice to people that are just there to see a film.
I go to view cinema so much that I absolutely hate the last kind of like that last chunk of stuff before the film comes on. So like that they show a whole bunch of stuff that is like says this isn't a cinema, and it will say this is a and it because you know they also like you know live stream events in the cinema
so they'll
be like this is an opera house, this is a racetrack, this is a you know this is a festival and all this.
Like,
I hate that advert because it's like has this. It's because of how emotionally manipulative all of the things are. They're trying to make you feel stuff. So, like, there's emotional music and makes you feel like, oh, man, I've got to see one of these things. It's amazing. So that annoys me. And then it annoys me when they do the... it goes butt dark.
Yeah.
And he goes, hello. Makes you notice, doesn't it? A little bit of silence. And you go, oh, I've got to sit through this again. In the I hate that. And I hate how he goes, hello. And there's always be someone in the cinema who goes, all right, mate. Or whatever, like a little response. You're like, okay, I've heard that a billion times. So that bit's annoying. And then I hate the Dolby surround sound stuff when it's just like, this is full on just like noises and shapes just blaring at the screen for like way too long, like 3 or 4 minutes of just going like... like that. And you're sitting there like, I don't need this.
Yeah.
So like all that stuff I can't...
Might not be a surprise to you, but my microphone peaked at that point.
Yeah, I should hope so. Should hope it did.
My mate Jay has to genuinely leave the cinema at that bit when Mark Strong's voice comes out.
Yeah.
Goes out and goes to the
I thought it was Mark Strong, and I've always said to people that's Mark Strong, and I've been like, it can't be, can it? I was like,
it's
Mark Strong.
And James also wants to know, what level rock climber are you? And what level do you wish you could be, and why? So you choose how much of that you answer.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not any level. I don't do rock climbing. Although, you know, something I'd like to do. It sounds great, and I don't know why I haven't done it. Now he said that.
Yeah.
Obviously, if I could be any level, I'd be number one, wouldn't I? Well,
yeah, that's true.
Well, the top level. You know, the best at rock climbing. I'd love it. Pretty much most things, you know. That are recreational and fun, I'd say I'd like to be the best. as good as you can be, because then I think you'd enjoy it more. You'd be able to do the most amount of stuff. Or maybe, you know, maybe some people would say they'd like to be one below that, so that you're really, really good, but you've still got something to work towards.
Oh, yeah, that's good. And Mark, finally, wants to know, which is the best Die Hard? He's obviously taken on my naming title.
Yes.
I mean, it's obviously the first one.
Yes.
But what's the best part of Alan Rickman's performance? Actually, just how great was Alan Rickman?
Sure.
Nice.
So, Rickman's great in that film, obviously. Yeah. It's a very good film. And very good Christmas film as well. It's nice to have like something feel weirdly Christmassy and be like, you know, that kind of film, action film. I think my favourite bit of Rickman is when he's pretending to be the American guy who works there.
Right, yeah,
and he's doing
that.
And, you know, he talks about like paintballing or something. Or he talks about because he's like, have you ever fired a gun before? And he's like, only the ones that fire paint. And I quite like that little bit. Like he's like, oh, that good, because you know, good riffing by Hans. Well done, man.
Hans has got that riffing. So now we're going to move on to my trademark question. Okay, I don't know if you remember this from the other times.
Should do.
So this is going to be 3.0 though, because we've done it twice before, so I've updated it.
Yeah.
So the first time, the trademark question is, what do you like?
Okay? Yeah, great.
Second time, what do you like now?
Yeah.
So have you got any guesses as to what the question will be?
You might flip this and go, what don't you like? You say, what did you like?
Oh, yeah.
And see if I have the same answer.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, what will you like? And really challenge me. Or it could be just, what do you like now, though?
That's probably a better way to word what I've written. What do you like this time?
That's good. Yeah.
So your previous answers were puddings, the countryside, and playlists you've made.
Still stand by all of them.
All them, yep.
And Was that my answer for the first one, or this?
The first one was puddings in the countryside, and the next one was playlists you've made, and then you took us through some of the playlists, and then you sent me the actual full
great
best of playlist, and
I'm glad that I did that. So still playlists. It's kind of beyond that now, expanding on that. Did I speak about the music of 2016 last time I was on?
I'm not sure.
So right now,
it was just over a year ago you were last on.
Right, so music wise now, it's just I've just done this project where I'm obsessed with all the music that came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I own like 366 albums that came out in 2016.
Right.
And I am also like, so right now all I'm doing is I've stopped buying them, I'm just listening all the time and really, really enjoying them. And kind of like exploring a whole year in music is quite a fun thing to do. So it gives you, not only are the albums like enjoyable on their own, but also in the context of the whole of like, you know, everything that was released that year.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of that gives it a whole new layer, and it makes you view it in a different way, different perspective on each album based on like how they stand up against all the other ones.
Yeah.
So at the minute, the music of 2016 is probably the main thing that I, when I go back to my hotel room at night on the tour, like that's what I look forward to doing. I listen to music and I watch, TV series, and that's like with a whiskey.
Oh yeah.
So that's what I like at the minute.
Yeah, yeah.
I get a double whiskey on the rocks. Sometimes scotch, sometimes bourbon. It depends how I'm feeling.
Yeah. I mean, you're gonna have to pick one. I'll have to get you to pick one now.
Yeah, bourbon.
Yep. Cool.
Tonight I'd have that. But ask me another day. But it'd be somebody else. But like. And then I go, watch like, you know, an episode of whatever TV show I'm watching, and then listen to some music. Make a little playlist. I've got like a playlist of the albums in 2016 that I love, and I've got another playlist of ones that I haven't listened to enough yet. So I listen to the ones that I haven't listened to enough, and then maybe I'll drag it over and put it in the love list.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm enjoying that, and also as a result of like getting into all that new music, I've been listening to watching a lot of YouTube channels for the first time. I've never really subscribed to YouTube channels before. And in the last year, I've weirdly got into it. So there's like the Needle Drop, which is like a guy who reviews music.
Okay, cool.
Dead End Hip Hop, which is a group of people who just chat about hip hop. They're probably my two favourite ones that I watch a lot.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of YouTube channels like What Culture and stuff, where they just do like top 10 lists of things. And I watch those as well. And so, I think that's basically I don't want to say my highlight of every day is getting back to my room on my own and just watching stuff on the computer, but it pretty much is.
Yeah.
But isn't that everyone's life, really, right now? So.
And finally, just for... So, anything you'd like to add or get off your chest at the end of this chat?
Just, get off my chest. I'll tell you about it. At the minute, I've got 7 dehumidifiers on in my flat, just on all the time. Because there was a leak in the shower.
Oh, no.
And I wish it wasn't happening. Every time I come home, that's why actually it's quite nice on the tour staying in hotel rooms. Because you're like, this is nice. And I get home and it's like, it's really hot and really noisy
all
the time. Because we're trying to dry the house out again.
Yeah.
So, that's the thing that's annoying me at the minute. Yeah. So, I'm looking forward to going back to my hotel room tonight and having a nice, peaceful night's sleep.
And because obviously we were chatting about after your second appearance on this podcast, you then had Conan in the book and everything like that.
Uh-huh.
What would you like to envisage will come out of doing this one? What are the next big goals?
This is the thing. I've never had... I know I should have goals with this, but like...
Because people are going to be ringing up after this one.
Well, it's always been an accident stand-up. Like, it was never like a deliberate plan, and that's why I think I've enjoyed it so much. So like... I'd say I just want to feel a bit more relaxed, if anything. A bit more chilled. I'm looking forward to working on a new show, but there's no deadline for it. So, from this, things can just keep moving forwards, but I wouldn't object if they slowed down a tiny bit.
Okay, cool. Cool, so thank you, James, very much
thank
for being
you.
On again.
Thanks for having me.
That was my chat with James Acaster. Thank you very much, James, for guesting on the podcast yet again, a third time, a podcasting first. And yeah, I'd also like to apologise for all the yes I did during that interview. You might not have picked up on it, but I certainly did when listening back. I said yeah a lot, like so much. And it really wound me up to no end. It wound me up a lot when I was listening back to it. So I apologise if that also wound you up. I decided not to mention it at this before you heard the interview, because then you might be focusing on it. But yeah, apologies for that. If you are wanting to keep up to date with James and what he's up to, he is on Twitter at James Acaster. And I very much recommend you get his book, James Acaster's Classic Scrapes, one of the funniest things I've ever read. And I have read some things, so you can't get higher praise than that. I reckon that will be on one of the quotes on the paperback version of the book. Don't want to. That's what I think. Thank you very much for listening. Hope to see you on the next episode. And please do make use of those quiz answers and try your best to get Michael Portillo on your team. I don't know, he's probably on Twitter. Give him a tweet. Hey, Mikey boy, we're heading down the old... this is tricky. So basically, I don't drink. I can't come up with pub names off the top of my head. It's not something that... Because everyone that can drink can do that instantly. But yeah, so I'll try to do it again when thinking up a pub name. Because it's just somewhere you might have a pub quiz. Okay, I'll try it again. Hey, Mikey boy, we're having a quiz down the old parsnip. Getting the drinks in at the parsnip. You want to come do the quiz? That's a conversation you could have down at the parsnip. Okay, yep, cool. I'll see you later. The parsnip. What a fucking idiot. If you like this podcast, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at ChatsForYou. And it'd be great if you could also leave a glowing 5-star review on the iTunes store. That'd be good as well. Nothing less than glowing though, just the glowing ones. You can also follow it via iTunes and your RSS feed via subscribing to it. But you probably knew that already. I don't need to tell you about. You probably knew subscribing to a podcast was a thing, and you'd quite like it if people stopped asking you to do it, because you're your own person and you can make your own choices. Isn't that right? Yeah, I'm on your side, guys. But still, please subscribe. It's all I have. Bye.